So following up on what Juan said, next steps, that's why we're here. There's been some sessions before. Last year, there was a great session on ergonomic injuries. And now it's with great pleasure to introduce someone who really does not need an introduction to this group, Dr. Kara Presta, who is a rural surgeon from Iowa, but also our vice president.
Well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Let's see here. There we go. I'm Phil Carapresso from Keokuk, Iowa, and I'm going to talk to you about the next steps. I'm really excited about this now, even more than before. I gave a panel last year on this and was moderator. I was wonderfully invited to do this again. I'm very much involved in this, but I'm typical of most surgeons. Juan and I did not talk about our presentations, and they're really very well coordinated, so that's great. So let's look at next steps. First of all, I have no disclosures, except that I become old, tired, and grumpy, but I really am very happy to be here, folks. So I like to, whenever I talk, I like to start with a definition of ergonomics. It really is a science. It looks at anatomy, physiology, engineering, all in a systems approach to the operating room and the performance of operations. It has divisions, cognitive, physical, and observational, and in the ORs they are applied. It looks at mental, postural, visualization, and manipulation. So we want to keep those all in mind. Here we are taking a pledge. I will attend to my own health and well-being and abilities in order to provide the highest standard of care. I think we look at our abilities significantly. We would take the Declaration of Geneva, which is what this is from. I took the Hippocratic Oath. So you say, if I'm going to do this and attend to my own health and well-being, why ergonomics, and what would be the next steps in ergonomics? Juan gave us a few ideas. Why ergonomics? I would respectfully disagree with some of the numbers, and I would say that ergonomic interventions are not formally taught in most surgical training programs. The studies that I see say that most surgeons have no knowledge about what correct ergonomic practices are, and the number could be as low as 10 or 11%. And in point of fact, if you look at all specialties over a period of time, you see each specialty has some element of work-related injuries, ergonomic problems. And in one study, the general and oncologic surgeons, 94% had some symptom within 6 weeks of their survey. So ergonomics is a learned and practiced behavior. We're not learning it, and we haven't practiced it. The symptoms are related to musculoskeletal injuries, which result from cumulative trauma disorders. Look at these risk factors: position, force, repetition, vibration, lifting. In some way, shape, or form, to certain degrees, these are involved in every operation we perform. What those result in is a cumulative trauma cycle, which starts with some low-grade injuries, irritations, inflammation, perhaps some tearing, perhaps the formation of adhesions. The adhesions coalesce, and you may end up then getting some permanent problem that requires surgical treatment. So why ergonomics? It's pretty simple. It's going to take more than prayers to fulfill that pledge to maintain our own abilities and health. Ergonomics can reduce and prevent work-related musculoskeletal injuries that result in cumulative trauma disorders. And rather than just and a timeout is wonderful, maybe that should be something we should do routinely. But if you follow the ergonomics process, which is really plan, do, check, act, you start with the fact that you identify it as a problem, you analyze what's going on, you develop solutions to solve the problem, you implement those solutions, and then you subsequently perform evaluations to see how you're doing. Remember, ergonomics is a learned and practiced behavior. So let's look at the cognitive and mental division and environment. Now look at, I'm going to point at you, all of you. It is you. First of all, you have to look at your own general health status. How healthy are you? Are you taking care of yourself? Do you have any underlying medical conditions that you present on a regular basis? Do you have a lack of rest? What are your general demographics? How many hours a week and a day do you work? Are you satisfied with your job? What's causing that dissatisfaction? Look at these things first. It's about you. And then I'm going to recommend that you follow the KISS principle. Now, I'll modify it to be polite and say it's keep it simple, surgeons. So let's then start with identification. Look at these surgeons. Here you have somebody, and how many of us have been stressed out like that, reflecting on what just took place? How many of us have stood in an operating room and looked with those anxious expressions on the faces that we see? So let's analyze then the risk factors. We've all heard these things. We're not bent over for all that long. You know, no, it's only a scratch. It'll get better. Don't be such a baby. In point of fact, surgeons seem to be reluctant to have their work habits analyzed by others and even themselves. Stress and fatigue occur for all of us from the time we start training all the way through our practices and continue. It's clear that 28% of surgeons surveyed have higher thresholds than the average population for stress. And if you look at injury rates, regardless of the type of surgery, you might say, well, I sit in a chair all day because I do robotics, or I only do laparoscopic, or I don't lift, or have all those risk factors. In point of fact, every one of the types of operations, whether it's open, laparoscopic, or robotic, have complications that could benefit from an ergonomic process. So then we're looking at all the risk factors. And again, here's a long list that you can run down. Stress, delay, what causes the stress, delays, are your skills up to snuff, have your patients suffered complications, do you have too big a workload, and overall, do these lead to dissatisfaction with your job? So if we develop solutions then following the ergonomic process, we first have to acknowledge. What's that mean? It means recognizing the facts that there is a problem. There is a problem, and we have to acknowledge that. Stop ignoring it. And if we acknowledge that there is a problem, then we can start an ergonomics program. So let's then develop solutions. Here's a long list of recommendations that we can follow. Get supportive policies in your workplace. Become on the medical staff. Get involved. Promote collegiality. And create better communications. Do exercises. Create wellness programs. There are a lot of things that can be done that can benefit your cognitive mental status. Okay. So what are we going to say? We're going to follow the same theme through the whole presentation here. It is you for physical and posture. Again, look at yourself. Do you have poor posture to begin with? Are you carrying excess weight? Do you have a lack of exercise? We talked a lot about this over coffee this morning. That may be the best single factor that we can address when we're talking about you. Do we have improper nutrition? I know someone that only has a beer and cashews for lunch every day. That's probably not the best lunch. Are you smoking? That would be terrible. I hope no one is doing that anymore. Again, look at your general demographics, days of week, hours of day, et cetera. But look at yourself and see, do I have a complaint? Does my back hurt? Does my neck hurt? Are my fingers swollen or sore? Address those things. Do not ignore them. Oh, it'll only get better. And then again, what's your satisfaction with your job? It is about you. Follow this principle. Keep it simple, surgeons. Start with you. Analyze what's going on with you first. So then we have identified that there is a physical posture problem in that division and environment. Look at these people. Look at the man on the left sitting in the position. How long is he going to do that? Look at the assistant on the right picture. How long are you going to be able to stay in that position? As long as you're told or is needed, right? That's what we do. So simple analysis would show you some, give you some good examples. Back position, neck position in that left picture, shoulder elevations and atypical, and pelvic asymmetry, the way you stand. Imagine standing that way for 2 or 3 hours. Then I really love the picture on the right. They obviously didn't, maybe they took an ergonomics course or something. They all seem to have erect postures that look pretty good, or that's the way they pose for pictures. Then again, here's a very long list that talk about more detailed analysis in every aspect of your positioning, performance of an operation. I know it's long, it's hard to see perhaps, but again, once you get past the simple things of what you do on a regular basis, look at all the details of how you stand, twist, turn, lift, stretch. Simple changes. Remember, ergonomic protocols are done according to the type of surgery you're doing to improve posture. So if you're sitting at a station like this, and we saw this picture, you go to this. It's about you. Keep it simple. Easy change to start with. Or if you're having pelvic asymmetry, go to this and stand up straight. Now, that's not easy. Detailed recommendations. Now, again, another long list. I'm going to summarize that long list by showing you a couple of things. If you're having problems, there are devices that can be employed during the performance and operation to help you with your posture. You can either lean forward on something or you can lean back on a device. These will help you. And if you've already kept it simple and looked at your back and your pelvic asymmetry and how you're holding your arms and your shoulders, you're going to be better off. You made improvements. So now, implementation here is going to be much more. We're going to have guidelines. And I know these are detailed and busy, and I would encourage you just to use them as examples. And when you get home and you follow this process, this is where you're going to end up having such guidelines that you're going to follow. You're going to have them for your neck, for your back, your trunk. And then routinely you'll be like the person on the left, not the person on the right in an operation. We're going to have more about that at the end. So then you're going to implement more guidelines. Well, here's the shoulder asymmetry. Well, here are the guidelines to correct that. So now you're not only thinking about it and keeping it simple, you've got more detail, and you're going to analyze what's going on in your operating room on a routine basis as part of your ergonomics process, because you have implemented guidelines, and then you're going to evaluate them. So here's the forearm and elbow, and here are the wrist, fingers, and hands. These are specific, and they will be implemented and then evaluated. So, organizational visualization manipulation. Again, it's you. You. Here you are in the operating room. You're dynamic, you're intelligent, you're hardworking, but you have to be involved. You have to seek expertise of people like on this panel. You have to be a leader in this process. It is insufficient to say, oh, the hospital doesn't do this or the hospital doesn't do that. You have to be involved and be a leader, and you start that way. That is the simplest, most direct way to handle the problem. So then we've identified the problem. I like this. I don't think I've ever been quite in an operating room that was that chaotic. But it would be hard to imagine that there's an organization and that you could see anything or handle or manipulate anything in that environment. It leads to this cartoon, which all of a sudden is not so far-fetched when you see a real operation in the left side picture. So you're going to analyze all of these things. And Juan talked a little bit about this: operative field illumination, lights, instruments, tubing, retractors. I think about the things. I just used it. It was handed to me. I used it. I need a retractor. Grab a hold of it. I didn't think about how it was an ergonomically compatible instrument. And we know this for a fact. If you have a higher case load and you're maintaining these poor positions, you have an increased risk of injury and at least more pain. So again, look at the physical setting in your operating room. Uneven, wet, slippery floors. Walkways that aren't properly maintained. The environment is not good. Are you using broken or maybe not broken, but suboptimal equipment? And how many of us have been in an operating room like this? I know after some catastrophes we've been in operating rooms like this, but you certainly don't want to have anything that starts with your operation that way. You look at the OR setup directly, and again, position, table height, arm boards, foot pedal positions. How is the overall room set up? What is the humidity? What's going on during the performance of the operation, the way the room is set up, that helps or works against your overall posture? So what are practical solutions? Again, keep it simple, surgeons. Look at your instruments. Look at your positions. Look at your equipment. Look how the room is set up. That covers everything we've talked about thus far. And remember that these all apply to any type of operation you're doing, whether it's open, laparoscopic, or robotic. And then what are the recommendations? Again, there are a lot of things listed on this slide. You look at your environment, so you're going to have a well-maintained operating room, dry floors, The lighting is going to be right. The humidity, the heat, the entire environment is going to be well maintained in your operating room. And if you do, you're going to have an operating room like this to work in every day. And you're going to make sure that it's maintained. And then you will have, again, written down guidelines that will be implemented that you could then go back and use as a basis for your evaluations. Is our ergonomic process and are our guidelines and plans working? And this would give you an example of visualization, table height, and the like. And again, you would have more guidelines listed below. I only show that as a sample of what can be done about patients' arms, table heights, etc. And again, you would have an outstanding, ergonomically beneficial operating room. So let's look then at some advanced solutions that we have. Ergo Connect. Anybody know about Connect? Sure you do. Ergo Connect would end up with an algorithm that looks like this that could tell you at the end how well you're doing. There's a reference there. I would tell you to look this up and you can learn a lot about it. I'll say a little bit more. Ergo Part is another computer-based tool to help you evaluate your ergonomic programs as the last part of your ergonomic process, the evaluation. And then there's video recording. That may be the simplest one to understand. Ergo Connect is something that was developed by Microsoft for part of Xbox and games. And it would give 3D markers that you can refer to from your position in the operating room, and you would look at something like this, which you would have pictures. There's somebody sitting on the right. The Ergo Connect analyzes it, and you would get that dot diagram on the bottom, which could then be analyzed to tell you how you were doing with your ergonomic positions. And then Ergo Part. Part stands for posture assessment in real time, or position assessment in real time. It is a computer-based tool. It's very interesting from a standpoint that I think there are devices that can be applied to the body to help with this. I've also read papers where there are actual observers in the operating room making records about how your positions are during the performance of the operation, and then they can be analyzed. The information can be submitted to the computer, and you'll then start getting outputs like this, which are, that's very busy, but basically on the right, what you see is a position and whether it's determined to be awkward or not awkward. And then you can take that back and see, well, how are we doing? Did I follow my guidelines that we have implemented in our ergonomics program? And then video recording. Now, this may be fairly straightforward and simple. This shows a surgeon doing a laparoscopic operation, and here they're looking at his elbow, his shoulder, and getting the proper position. You can look at these postoperatively and see how well you're doing with your ergonomic guidelines. Are you following those guidelines? So here's the final step in the ergonomics injuries. It's incumbent upon all of us to protect the next generation of surgeons from cumulative trauma disorders. There are evidence-based guidelines, as we can see. We can develop our own guidelines, and these can be incorporated into surgical training programs. The one program that I could find information about easily was Duke. And at Duke, they have senior residents not only teaching the junior residents how to perform the operations, but how to do this with the best ergonomic approach. So I thank you for your attention. We've looked at next steps in ergonomic process, and we've looked at the divisions and how they apply to the OR environment. If I had a minute, I would... I would take any questions because I have another panel that I have to go to, folks. So I thank you very much for being here. And if anybody has any questions, I'd be happy to answer them now, if I can.
My name's Daryl Gray. I'm from London, Ontario, Canada. It's an excellent talk. I was here last year at the same talk and went back to my place to look at everything that we did. And everything that we are doing and have been doing at our hospital has been ergonomically unsound. And one of the major problems that we have, we built a brand new laparoscopic operating room. It's state of the art. It's unbelievable. There's cameras everywhere. We have a beautiful endoscopy suite. Our laparoscopic monitors are good if you're 6'2". None of our residents are that tall. 50% female. They're all looking up at all our laparoscopic monitors all day long. In our endoscopy suites, our monitors are bolted to the wall in an ergonomically unsound fashion, so you have to actually turn and look this way while you're doing colonoscopic maneuvers. To try and get traction in a hospital to change these maneuvers as a physician is almost impossible. There's no, you know, I think if I was a nurse and I had a complaint about that, I think more would get done because they are employees of that hospital. But as a physician, you are left with, yeah, well, that's too bad. You know, they get the mats, we don't get the mats. There's a sort of disconnect. So is the American College of Surgeons, or does the American College of Surgeons have a policy or an ergonomic output statement that you could say, listen, American College of Surgeons, here's what we have on our website, here's what we should be doing, just like your slideshow was. It was fantastic to see that, but to put all those down as an ACS initiative would be a fantastic thing to do.
Yeah, I thank you very much, and I appreciate your ideas, and I'll defer to some other of the panelists, but what I'm learning since I've been here at this clinical congress is that the American College of Surgeons is focused on almost an infinite number of things, and they're doing a good job with all of them, including this. This panel in the 2 years in a row, and another one's now planned in the near future, show that the American College is looking at this. But as far as having an official, formal statement that you could take to someone and say, hey, this is it, I'm unaware of one. It is coming. It's regrettable. It's slow. But it's coming, and I think that's probably the best we can do.
Just to let you know, the work from the Competent Health Work Group has been working on this, and that initiated some of the. This talk is partly with their help. Last June, at the AMA meeting, a resolution was passed calling on the AMA, the American College of Surgeons Joint Commission, American Hospital Association to work together for positive results. So I really appreciate you bringing that up, and it will go through channels, and that's my goal, as yours.
And I thank you. What I would ask everybody in the room, and I'm going to do this personally, will be, we came on Thursday morning at 8 o'clock in the morning. We heard an excellent presentation that we regard, panel that we regard as vital to the future of surgery. There were 10 people in the room, and thank God, I'm glad you're all here. We would like the American College of Surgeons to continue an ergonomics program to develop a policy, and we think one of the first steps will be to have your next panel on Tuesday at 10 o'clock. I mean, something like that, okay? I really think that would be a very helpful thing that would facilitate this whole thing. Sir. I think we do.
Okay. A quick one, please.
Quick.
Sure. So I'm on the industry side. I'm not a surgeon. My company, Meslite, is developing a sterile light for open surgery, and we want to make the headlight a relic of the past to take weight off of your neck and heads. My question is, you provided an excellent presentation with a lot of data on the need for change, and do you know of any good data on more the economic cost to the hospitals or to insurers that's very surgeon specific?
You may actually have. So there is growing data about the loss of resources of physicians who are out of work. So disability folks would have that data. But there's also folks retiring early. Everyone in this room knows of somebody who retired early. I have a good friend who's an ENT doctor who's basically lost about 15 years of productive practice because she can't do surgery anymore. A general surgeon near where I live and work retired about 10 years early because of ergonomic. So there's the direct cost that from insurance is paying for treatment and for disability time, but there's the cost that's a little harder to grasp, and that's loss of resources, loss of work time for that qualified and experienced surgeon.
I would love to speak with you maybe after, and I'm trying to put together this analysis so that eventually when we launch the product, we can communicate to the OR teams. So,
yeah. We'd love to.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. So why is this so important? It's important because we're losing colleagues. Not only are they getting hurt, and we don't want to see our colleagues hurt, but we're in a surgeon shortage, and the shortage is only getting worse. So if we can find means to allow some of our best experienced surgeons to continue their productive treatment of their patients, that's a win-win for everyone.